welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course, on our podcast. I'm Ailey Packham, and if we had the wings of a sparrow, we would be flying over Selhurst with the assistance of OldFootballShirts.com. Well, following the collective sigh of relief after last Saturday's ugly win against Huddersfield, we all now face a sharp intake of breath as we head to Snake Mountain to face them. It is yet to be confirmed whether the fire brigade will be handing out breathing apparatus as we head through the turnstiles. Joining me today to discuss that and more is, of course, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back author, journalist and musician Nick Trepanic. And we also have a very, very special question of Raw with Palace fan and Rev stalwart Jim Daly. Welcome, guys. How are we doing?
Yeah, fine. Feeling a bit better after the Huddersfield win. You know,
it was. I said in the intro there, Nick, it was a massive sigh of relief at the end of
wasn't
that.
Wasn't it just? Yes. And when that goal hit the net, oh, God, yeah. I mean, everybody breathed out, having, I don't know, you were sort of holding your breath for about 79 minutes. And I don't blame our lads at all for over-exuberant celebrations. There's a fantastic shot on YouTube of Lewis Dunk going absolutely mental, actually.
He gets a bit excited, but I think sort of rightly so.
And Doney, whatever. If he'd wanted to get all the way into the back of the West End lower and into the concourse, I would have forgiven him.
Mm. It could have bought the pies and pints. I'll tell you what, there was the lovely thing when he's standing up on the edge of the concrete plinth, and the way he raises his fist and he's got a black glove on, and it does sound a bit ludicrous. He reminded me of Tommy Smith. Do you know who I'm talking about here? Tommy Smith, 1968 Olympics.
Oh, yes, the Olympics, the black gloves. Yes, yeah, black power.
It was, yeah, I mean, obviously he wasn't signifying that. I think he was just sort of raising his arm, but it was just such a weird pose, so, yeah.
Okay, last time you were in, Nick, we were talking about possibly a top 10 finish. It's not looking like that so much at the moment.
It's still possible, isn't it? Just about, no. Well, just one win makes such a difference, doesn't it? I mean, that... That 30 points looks pretty good, and I think another two will probably do it. I mean, I don't think Cardiff are feeling terribly confident about life, you know, with Sol Bamber out, and I think their current ambition is to finish with 30 points, which I think is where they finished the last time they were in the Premier League. So, looking at some of their fixtures, I think it'll be tricky for them to get much more than about 32 to 33. But then, of course, funny things happen towards the end of season, so. Two wins, and if they could be against Cardiff and Southampton, I think that would probably do it. Of course, if one happens to come against Crystal Palace, then so be it. What can we do?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've been doing a brilliant series on the Albion website.
Not too kind.
Interviewing.
No, we're not too kind. It's all right.
The journalists and fans of the other from the other clubs around. What's the word in the press room about how we slumped and how we're going to get out of it?
Well, a lot of people that I've spoken to, I mean, Mike Walters, when I did the Watford one, and Dominic Fifield, the Crystal Palace fan, you know, they don't see us as being in danger. I mean, which is kind of gratifying. I mean, they think we've got easily enough to escape, and Dominic particularly thinks Cardiff have probably gone. Wow. I'd like to think that they're right. I mean, from our position here, of course, we're very worried. And it's interesting, when I spoke to Alistair Campbell for the Burnley piece, he says that he's a natural pessimist and he always assumes that things are going to go wrong. Interestingly, now, of course, we've gone back above Burnley. Mm. but, of course, you know, I always have to be talked down from, you know, a ledge of despair when we haven't won, you know, 6-0. So you can imagine what it's been like for me, you know, recently. But, you know, I think if you try to detach yourself from being a fan and look at the situation, I think probably we will be all right if just. We should be able to pick up two or even three wins looking at the fixtures, of course. You know, should. What does that mean?
If, you know.
I mean, what I don't like is people saying, oh, you know, you've got easy fixtures, you've got Cardiff and Southampton. Well, you know, it's not as if those two aren't going to be fighting hard. They'll be thinking,
we went to Fulham.
Yeah. I mean, of course, these are the clubs who are going to be fighting hard. I mean, I would imagine, in one way, Bournemouth and Newcastle might be easier games because they won't see themselves, you know, in such direct rivalry with us. So,
their season's largely over, isn't it, at the moment, even already. I mean, they're both out of the cup, safe in the league. you know, I won't say they're going to quite hit the beach, but, you know, it's. I think Nick's reasoning is absolutely correct. You know, if you're playing a team that's scrapping, yeah, you're really going to be up against it. When you've got a team who's sitting comfortably and know they're going to be, you know, in line for another 110 million, you know, next year.
Don't forget, we've got a trip to Wolves on one of our lucky grounds.
Yeah, absolutely. Although, you know, could get them in the FA Cup final. So, you know,
Wolves are a complete basket case at the moment, though. They're beating all the top sides and losing to the bottom ones.
Well, they lost twice to Huddersfield. That's which takes some doing.
Yes, it does. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a fascinating end of the season. But I mean, for all the Huddersfield game has done, the win has done, is calmed down the. And I have to say this word, it's calmed down the bedwetters a little bit. You know, there is an awful lot of nonsense going on. It's not as though Chris Hughton has suddenly become a bad manager. And all the players that have become poor acquisitions and Paul Winstanley is a dreadful heading up a dreadful recruitment team. It doesn't work that way, especially when you've got the nature of Pascal Gross and Bissouma, who are seen as the next great shining thing. And you think, well, hang on, why have they now? You've got the punters, you know, as Nick's colleague Paul Hayward call it, the citizen journalists. Who will then say they read the stats and Hughton is responsible for it because he won't pick Ali J because he cost 16 million or whatever it was. It doesn't work like that. Sorry, did I rant this last week? I think
yeah,
I did.
You probably did.
Yeah.
But you see, the part of the narrative is not that Chris Hughton is a bad manager, but that he's the same manager who went to pieces in his second season in the Premier League at Norwich, or, you know, that they faded away and people are worried that history is going to repeat itself again. Well, of course, you know, we always worry about, you know, everything that can go wrong until it doesn't. Mm. So, I mean, it's just human nature. The other problem is, of course, the Premier League, there are fewer games. And in these sort of vast deserts of time between games, there's nothing to do but worry.
Yes. Yeah.
That's what I do. And I can now take the plastic sheet off my bed for 2 years.
But the thing the additional thing is that Chris Hughton does have a much better sort of background support here than he did have at Norwich.
It doesn't make him immune to criticism, though.
No, of course not.
I am going to criticise him for the team selection on Saturday against Huddersfield because we're playing Huddersfield, who maybe scored a goal in 1862 or something. We picked a side to match their formation. Well, we're playing at home to Huddersfield.
And we also hung back on the edge of our own penalty area as if we were playing, you know, a combined Liverpool, Barcelona, Manchester United.
Yeah, and yet you rewind to when we played Huddersfield away and we had Jared Evans in the studio here, who actually I think called it brilliantly. And he was saying about the Huddersfield manager sort of, you know, having Chris Hughton in his pocket because of the way he plays, you know, our team plays, you know, that they'll play a high line because they know Murray won't beat them. And then we put Andoni on and we're A for away and Andoni scores the winner up there and we're fine again. You think, well, clearly that's not the case. You know, Hughton does know how to adapt. What I see, like, for instance, you mentioned it just now, the Fulham game, you know, perfectly cruising in the first half, and then they just turn to whatever it is they turn to. That's not Chris Hughton being a bad manager. That's the players just not doing their job.
I won't criticise him for not reacting because they were...
No, the players knew... No, it's the players who should be reacting. They know what to do. They know what their job is, and they just didn't do it that day.
Nick?
Yes, I mean, I actually think there was at least one of the Fulham goals that day should have been disallowed. I think Dunk was fouled, but I think the referee got caught up in the whole mood of the moment, and he was sort of thinking, oh, you know, Fulham are on top here, and just kind of wasn't looking. I mean, I think there was... I think some of those goals were scored from so close in that you've got to look at the centre-halves and the goalkeeper in a couple of cases. But collective madness, you know, and look at, you know, look at our record, you know, 2 wins over Huddersfield, who we've usually struggled against. Fulham, normally a team we beat with our eyes closed. We've got 1 point off this season. I mean, that's just the way it goes sometimes.
Absolutely. So, you know, and we've still got, you know, we've still got the hoodoo over Manchester United down here. So, exactly.
But, okay, well, there were 3 changes from the lesser defeat, with Bissouma coming in for the Croc Gross, Bernardo replacing Bong, and Jahan Bash oosting the ever-present Solly March, who, for the first time this season, didn't play any minutes at all.
Was he on the bench?
Yes,
he was, I think he'd just come back from injury, though, hadn't he? I mean, Bissouma is a character, I think, that he is... possibly, for me, even more so than Knockhart, even more so than Izquierdo, Bissouma is a fellow who's actually, you know, excites me more than anyone else. Because, I mean, with Knockhart and with Izquierdo, when they're on fire, when they're flowing, they are you know, the kind of entertainers. They're brilliant going forward. I mean, yes, the pair of them will actually then do their defensive duties and do the dirty work. But when you see Basuma doing that, he'll do it with a little bit of creativity. He'll do it with a bit of flair. You know, the ball will come to him. He's got his back to goal. He's got his back to you know, the forwards behind him. Stevens or Proper will do the sensible thing and play it back to someone, which is fine, but sometimes that will break up a flow. Basuma is always looking to attack. He'll try and turn his man, and more often than not, does do so. I'm really excited by Basuma. You know, I've been grizzling about Gross all season, not because he's not a decent dead ball specialist. He is a very, very good one, probably arguably the best in the club, but he does not move. Basuma is very mobile. I love watching him.
Well, Basuma, unlike...
you know he's going to have a stinker against Palace now.
Well, but Basuma, unlike the Palace icon, Mr. Zaha, he plays the game with a smile on his face, and it looks like he's enjoying himself, but he is such a talent, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that impressed me was that diagonal ball through to Murray for his chance in the second half. I mean, I think that with Basuma, he sometimes doesn't lift his head quickly enough and that there are passes on that he doesn't see quite soon. That'll come. But, you know, Kyle was always one of my favourite midfield players because as soon as he gets the ball, he looks to go forward, and Basuma's the same. On the subject of Solly March, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see him come back in for Johan Bakhsh at Palace simply because of his he can help defending. You know, and if Bernardo needs help with a certain Mr. Zaha, I think Solly March is probably more the man to sort of be aware of that situation.
I was envisaging Bong possibly coming back for this game.
Depends. I mean, it depends kind of also what side that Zaha plays on as well. I mean, you know, he has played on the right, he has played on the left. If he's on the left, that March might play down that side and be helping
out. Well, Zaha and Bong have got some previous anyway. I mean, the game up there last season. I mean, I've got to say it. I mean, where we were sitting in the press box, and you could see it just down in the kind of the left back, you know, that where the players come out in that area. Once in the, I've mentioned this on the show already, but Zaha, he kind of ran into Bong, making out that, you know, he checked his run, and he hadn't. He just deliberately run into him, but he tried to sort of like throw a bit of handbags out there. No one saw it. Ref didn't see it. He let it drop. 10 minutes later, tried exactly the same. The referee saw it, and he's giving it loads again. Bong is going, hang on, what's going on here? So I think there's a bit of previous with them. So I would prefer, I think, probably on balance to see Bernardo.
Okay. Well, I mean, this was we mentioned Johan Bakhsh there, and he did start a game against Huddersfield, and he had his best game for us.
Oh, easily, yes. Took men on. He did a little bit of that against Derby, actually. I think recently he's been looking as if he's been trying to play a safe ball and keep possession. But I think, you know, when someone costs that much money, you want to see something from them. You know, you want to see crosses and assists and goals.
Well,
and
I mean, that shot in the first half.
Shot half was fantastic. And there was, you know, a few runs in the second half, little, you know, dummies and some tricks and stuff, you know, that looked great. I'm really impressed.
I mean, that shot, the fact he actually took it from the apex of the box, and and everyone thought, where's that going? And it just cannoned off the bar. It was just... Oh, wow.
Well, the thing is, I think it looked a bit weird because the goalkeeper never moved. He didn't make a sort of an effort to get to it. I maybe thought it was either going over or it was just nowhere near it. But yeah, it was a great effort. I think that Johan Bakhsh has actually really come to the party was in the FA Cup games. I mean, again, in the replay against West Brom, I think it was superb. And bit by bit, he is actually improving. I can't believe that it's actually the difference between the Eredivisie and the Premier League, or even playing for Iran and, you know, in internationals, in the World Cup and things like that, is such a major sort of difference. Mm. But, you know, he's clearly taken his time to actually settle in. But when he has settled in, and I say Huddersfield, he's played really well.
Christian did say after the Huddersfield game that he's taken a while to adjust to the sort of defensive requirements of playing in a 4-3-3 in this country and for this club, he said. So, you know, that obviously meaning what Chris expects his wide players to do, and which he always has expected them to do. But I think it just shows that the FA Cup run has been very, very useful for, you know, integrating players and bedding them in and giving people minutes. And, you know, people say, oh, you know, you should play a stronger team. But I think we've shown that we can get through the rounds, you know, use the FA Cup, you know, in a very positive way for squad rotation. You know, and it has had a positive effect, I think, you know, in the last couple of games, because I think we played well at Leicester without getting a result, and you know, certain people played well against Huddersfield.
I can see Jack and Bakhsh, for instance, playing against Millwall. You know, I think I won't say exactly a shoe-in, but you can see that's be the perfect game for him.
OK, well, a lot has been said about Chris Hughton not being a very proactive manager. In fact, I said it a couple of minutes ago. But in this game against Huddersfield, he did. Glenn Murray got the hook after 56 minutes. And quite frankly, I'm surprised
no one's surprised.
He lasted that long.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, when we've talked about in the past about sort of Murray being so immobile, him and Gross being so immobile, and this was a defence that needed turning inside out because, frankly, at the time they were comfortable. And that first half was probably one of the most turgid, you know, low speed, low pace. Low quality halves we've seen. Two teams shot to pieces on confidence. And yeah, it needed something doing. And when you've got someone who is such a live wire, sometimes a little bit too aggressive a live wire, as Andoni coming on, then something else is going to happen.
And Izquierdo came on as well.
Yeah.
And we had a small part to play, but got fouled for the free kick, played the ball into Knockout. And Knockout also, I think, has come on recently as well. Just on a word on Murray, and the two chances he had at Leicester. Got into great positions to miss them,
yes.
You know, and got into, you know, into the 6 yard box.
Absolutely,
almost. And
yeah.
So, you know, he's still got that in his locker.
And he had a chance in this game as well. He found himself. Mm. We mentioned earlier there, but I mean, it was the introduction of Andoni really, really changed the game. And as a forward, you know, it was shooting on site, and
he made Lussell make an excellent save. You know, with his. Can I also just commend Izquierdo for probably the worst shot of the season so far?
Oh, yeah,
I mean, don't get me wrong. He's skied. You know, they've all skied some beauties, but this one went out on the full on the touchline. That was beautiful.
But when Andoni,
in a rubbish way.
But when Andoni's goal did actually go in, it was, you could just feel the tension lift.
Yes, I think that around me, certainly in the West Stand upper, certainly there was most people obviously going completely bananas, but you could see a few people around me just sort of, I don't know, whatever. I can't exclaim it on the radio, but thinking, thank goodness for that.
Okay.
Although with a little more expletive thrown in.
And the Huddersfield manager was so angry.
Yes.
Oh.
I don't know what game he was watching, because I mean, apart from that, they
were you in the presser afterwards?
Yes.
Go on.
It was. I have to say, I found it. Kind of, I was struggling to suppress a laugh. I must say, but no, he was ranting. He really was.
What was he? I mean, we saw what he was doing on Match of the Day.
Talking about the defence switching off from the free kick. I mean, the free kick was largely incidental. I mean, the ball had been in play for a couple of passes before the cross was made. But I think it was Kongolo just stood there and watched Andoni go.
Mm.
And I think Moy as well could have done more to block the cross. But they didn't. Mm. Just rejoice.
Absolutely. But the thing is, I think he felt that it was an even game all the way through and should have got a point. Well, really?
Yeah. Well, Mike Dean, who was the referee, actually had a reasonably decent game.
I bet Mike Dean is loving the fact that we're talking about Mike Dean.
Probably.
Incredibly, he's been on 99 red cards since January. And we were all thinking, no, he won't give a red card in Brighton Huddersfield. He's not going to give a red card in the last game on Match of the Day. He's waiting for a massive. He's waiting for an FA Cup final, and he's going to have a T-shirt with 100 red cards on that he's going to show. He's going to rip his jersey.
Can you
off.
Book himself for that?
Well, to be honest, he'd have given it in the Brighton Huddersfield game, insisting the Match of the Day, then make it the first game.
Yeah, probably.
It's a moment.
But what I was saying, he had largely a good game, but there's a couple of incidents towards the end where we could have had a couple of penalties. Now, next season, with the introduction of VAR, and that's
deep joy.
Obviously a hot topic this week with the Man United late winner. What do we think about this? I mean, is it going to be a help or a hindrance?
Football is a game of errors and mistakes, and you know, if we can't go back and correct players' mistakes, why should we go back and correct referees' mistakes? You had this complete ludicrous situation this week where on the morning after the Manchester United PSG game, I was listening to a certain person on, I think, Talk Sport saying, oh, it's terrible. Is it right that a game of this magnitude should be decided on a VAR decision? And I'd heard the same guy a couple of months ago saying, is it right that a wrong refereeing decision can decide a game of such magnitude? Why don't we bring in VAR? Because we've got the technology. You know, people just aren't satisfied, are they? There's nothing you can do to please some people. I must say...
Have you moved on now? So since it was first mooted and then it's been trialled and what have you, have you moved one way or the other on it?
I've always been one of those people who says that the game is the game and it should be the same game in the parks as it is, you know, in the Premier League, until someone pointed out that you have proper athletes and, you know, really good players in the Premier League, and in the parks you have people like me. so perhaps it's not valid. I think it's, you know, it needs to be trialled, but you know, are we going to sort of unleash it on the Premier League with the sheer slowness of it? You know, the time it takes. If it's not a clear miscarriage of justice, you know, then play on. I mean, I think that, you know, ruling on the field stands, as they say in the NFL. But this is an obvious and quickly obvious reason to change a decision.
Well, that's just it. I mean, the Man United game this week, I mean, it was a last-minute shot that was going wide. The guy didn't necessarily... He was jumping to block and it hit his arm. and people are still... The ref went and had a look at it and he's eventually given the penalty. But people are still arguing about whether it was actually a penalty or not. I don't know if it was a penalty or not. Well, I don't know what the rules are.
Well, this is where IFAB comes in. And I think there's still a lot of people out there who think that FIFA make the rules in football and they don't.
And there was a piece in The Sun today saying that wouldn't be a penalty under VAR rules next season. There you go.
Well, therein lies the point. IFAB, they've met. I mean, it's FIFA plus the FA, the Scottish FA, the Welsh FA and the Irish FA, which is the Northern Ireland FA. They meet once a year and they discuss various rule changes, including next year is coming in, is a player being substituted goes off at the nearest point on the pitch. Now, people are saying, well, the referee stops the game anyway. No, but it actually then keeps the flow going. For all the people who are actually moaning about VAR stopping the game, so do substitutions, in which case get them done quickly, because that's the nature of it. That's the point of it. Some player will actually, you know what they're going to do. Instead of being the third from the pitch, they'll be, you know, in the centre circle. But the upshot is that, you know, if you're near the edge of the pitch, get off on that end. And I think that's really good. But yes, any rules that are actually changed by the annual March meeting of IFAB come into effect on the 1st of July, which means obviously for us it's the next season. Obviously there's other countries that have summer like in Scandinavia have summer tournaments. Right. So they don't come in until the following July the 1st. But they've kind of nominally suggested as to what constitutes accidental handball, but having read what they've said, I can't see us clarifying it at all. So even The Sun saying, you know, next year that won't be handball, well, I'm not sure they can actually say it, because how are they on earth going to do it?
It comes down to a referee looking at something, either a live action or a screen, and having to make a decision. And sometimes, you know, what one referee will see as handball, another one.
One thing I can't get them doing, I can't understand doing, I think it's totally unfair, and this is done all the time, is when they get to see a replay in slow motion, which completely skews what happens. You see a ball going towards a player, and if the player hasn't got his arm out of the way, he's not getting his arm out of the way, it looks like he's left it there deliberately. When you see it in real time, bang, he hasn't got a chance to get out of the way, and I think that slow motion really skews it. So if they're going to review it, by all means do it, but do it in real time, not in slow motion.
I mean, it's there for clear and obvious errors. I mean, quite frankly, no one's bothered if someone's earlobe is ever so slightly offside in this, which is what we've been seeing. In fact, Gary Lineker commented on that this week.
We're not going to say exactly what he said. Yeah.
So Gary Lineker's earlobe, she's talking about considerably.
Yes, you have to be a good 3 yards behind, but yes.
So, I mean, we could have benefited, but then we could have seen the other side of it as well. So, I mean,
the number of people have said, Brian said, the number of penalties we could have had. And I think, actually, you look back on it, the number of penalties we could have conceded, and you've forgotten about.
Well, I'm talking about more about the offside goals that have been given against us this year.
Well, there's that as well, yeah. And, I am of the opinion, I'm sure someone can come up with some stats, but by and large, it does balance itself out. You know, for the number of things that we forget against that go against us or don't go against us and so on.
Games are going to go on for much longer, though, aren't they?
They are. We are. I mean, no one's going to get home from an evening game for, you know, even London teams want to get home.
Okay. Well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here with me, Ady Packer, and I'm here with Alan Wares and with Nick Schrepanik, and we are brought to you in association with oldfootballshirts.com, and we've got a beauty, which I'm going to pass to Nick to describe.
That's a beauty, isn't it?
Ooh, it's a Lecoq Sportif, red with little pairs of... sort of hoops, very thin striped
hoops.
Kind
of horizontal pinstripes, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, except, yes. I don't know. I'm trying to look at that.
Who's the sponsor
badge
there?
Mice Pills.
All right.
So.
And he hasn't photoshopped out the badge this time. It actually looks not dissimilar to the Danish national shirt from years back, but they've always been Hummel, I think. And sorry, why do I know this? How do I know
this? Belgian or Dutch team?
Okay, it is Belgian. Yes.
Okay, with Mace Pills, I'm not surprised. Yes,
red. Antwerp. Or
I'm going to suggest the second, because he likes his away shirts. Just to throw us, I'm going to suggest it's the away shirt of Union Saint-Gilloise.
No, it is not. This is what fell from Football Shirts has to say about this particular vintage beauty. This is the Standard Liège home shirt from 1981 to 1982. They play in the Belgian First Division, which is the top level of football in the Kingdom of Belgium. Their home ground is the Stade Maurice de France, which holds...
Oh, joy, AD speaking French.
Which holds 27,670... Waffle quaffing fans on a match day.
Waffle quaff.
Standard players are nicknamed the Rouches because of their red shirts. Now, this is a corruption of the French word rouge, which is pronounced with a Liège accent, and it sounds like rouche. The sponsor on the shirt is Meijs Pils, a brewer formed in 1930 and brewer the third biggest selling beer in Belgium after Jupiler and Stella. The side has been in the top flight since 1921, a record in Belgium, and have won the league on 10 occasions. Most recently in 2008, they've also won the Coupe de Belgique 8 times. Current captain is Sébastien Pocognoli, someone who we'll all be familiar with after that stunning goal he scored for the Albion in April 17 at Loftus Road. Other former players with links to the UK include Jelle Van Damme, who made a handful of appearances for Southampton, Joseph Yobo, who's from Everton, and of course, Anthony Knockhart. Yeah. And so thanks for that, Phil. That was absolute beauty. And of course, you can go to oldfootballshirts.com and see a number of these absolutely stunning shirts. I mean, I loved that one.
That's quite a nice one.
Imagine Anthony Knockhart in red.
Yeah.
I know, but it doesn't feel right, does it?
I mean, it's very, very similar to the St Etienne shirt from the same era.
Yeah, except it was green, yeah.
Yeah. Which is beautiful.
There you go. All right, nice one. Thanks for that. So, yes, go to Phil's site, and he's rapidly approaching 100,000 shirts. He's going to do something. I think he'll buy everyone in the stadium a pint or something when it gets to 100,000. I didn't say that.
Okay. Well, of course, we are playing Crystal Palace today, and we are now joined by a Crystal Palace fan. He also writes for the 5-year plan fanzine. He's on Yahoo Sport.
He's everywhere.
He's a comedian. We are now joined by Jim Daly from the 5-year plan, and this is your second appearance on Radio in Sussex this week, Jim. How's that going on?
I think they basically don't have anyone else's phone number.
But welcome to the Albion Raw, Jim. It's great to have you on. I mean, we've met a few times here. I mean, let's start about how we, how we know each other. We'll talk about the 5-year plan and all the things you do with Palace in a minute. But we have a kind of a Renfe link here, don't we?
We do, yeah. And every year we talk about the derby, that Renfe sort of comes up. And it's, I think it's the best thing, isn't it, about the rivalry between Palace and Brighton. It's
yes.
I'm so proud to have been involved with it. I've played for Palace since 2002, I think, 2003, which...
That's an we very much thank you and appreciate your support for it as well.
It's in his 18th year now?
The next game would be the 18th, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But tell us how you got involved in that particular, the side of it.
Well, yeah, there was a guy called Kevin Risby who used to run the Palace team for the charity game, and he also used to play in my Sunday league team.
Yeah.
And we were a team for the Palace fans, and he asked around... back in 2003, if anyone wants to play. And I was like, yeah, I was definitely playing that. Uh-huh. And then I scored on my debut in a 5-1 win.
Oh, I thought you mentioned that somehow.
Yeah. So I mean, we lost the next game 6-1, but, you know, we'll forget about that. We'll take that.
We're glorifying that. But, no, I mean, seriously, I mean, it's what I say, when you're talking Brighton Palace, and there's, like I say, there's an air of the Christmas Day truce about it that, you know, it's a good thing about the rivalry. I mean, we could talk about the bad things about the rivalry, but frankly, this isn't the platform for it, you know, and it's a lot of it's a load of old nonsense. So tell us briefly in that case about your Palace supporting history.
Oh, blimey. Well, my first game was the 1st of January, 1992, against Notts County, 1-0 win. Marco Gabbiadini scored.
I remember him.
And that actually happened, apparently.
I can't actually remember him playing. Yeah, I remember him playing against Brighton a few times. But that was for Sunderland, I seem to remember. I can't remember.
Him from Sunderland, where he was supposed to be the replacement for Ian Wright. And obviously didn't quite live up to the goal scoring exploits of Ian Wright. But apparently he scored in that first... I don't actually remember it. I was only about 6, I think, at the time. But that was it. You know, and my dad took me. My dad gave me no choice but to be a Palace fan.
Right.
Whatever, 25 years later, 28 years later, I'm still here.
Are you from that neck of the woods, then?
I'm from North Kent, northwest Kent, originally. So which is just about sort of... It's Palace territory, but it's kind of where that sort of Palace Brighton territory starts to merge a little bit, doesn't it? Sort of going back down towards sort of West Sussex.
All right.
Because I'm from Eatonbridge originally, but that's sort of near East Grinstead and Uckfield and that kind of area. And it's sort of where the Palace Brighton territory starts to overlap a little bit.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm. Yeah.
But I mean, obviously we've got this long history with Palace. Now there is a very real chance that if you win away at Watford, and we win at Millwall, we could be facing you in the FA Cup. How do you feel about that?
God, I mean, that would be huge, wouldn't it? That would just be amazing. And to be honest, actually, I'd be well up for that.
Mm.
I mean, I think it'd be a brilliant day. I think we'd probably win. I mean, I'm on current form, maybe. But they haven't said that. You know, derby days and cup days,
yeah.
Form kind of goes out the window. But, I mean, that'd be amazing, wouldn't it? Sort of Wembley, you know, half full of Palace, half full of Brighton. The atmosphere would be absolutely unreal. Wembley wouldn't have seen anything like it. Yeah.
Do you think they'd be selling half and half scarves?
I would never own such a thing.
No, nor should anyone. I mean, one thing that will happen is if that does happen, is the amount of TV and media work that you'll do and we'll do, talking once again about the rivalry. It's a rivalry we don't understand. You're miles apart. Well, I mean, I don't know if you guys feel the same. I guess you do because you've got closer rivals anyway. But one of the things is that it's a rivalry that others don't understand. And actually, just because it's about us and yourselves, no one else's opinion really matters, does it?
Exactly. And all those people outside of Brighton and Palace that call it the M23 derby.
Oh, I can't believe you got that in there.
Off, as far as I'm concerned.
Well,
they're
likewise,
people that don't understand
mate.
Because no one else on our side calls it that. But,
no one...
you know, these are people that don't understand.
Well,
but on another side of the coin there, Jim, there is the Proud Eagles have got a campaign going called 99 Reasons to Hate Brighton, but Homophobia Shouldn't Be One of Them. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so they're called Proud and Palace, and they're an LGBT group. They do loads of great work. And I think it's just a campaign. I'm not involved in it, but we are sort of supporting it through FYP, the fanzine podcast that I do for Palace. And I think it's just reminding people just to be sensible around this fixture. You know, I think it sometimes encourages people to be idiots around fixtures like this. And actually, 99.9% of fans from both teams are, you know, good, well-natured, well-meaning fans. And it's just reminding people, don't be idiots. Don't say stupid stuff that you'll regret. Yeah, and quite rightly, there are 99 reasons to hate Brighton. I would suggest there are probably more.
Can you name
than 99,
them?
but it's a great campaign.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I mean, go on.
Well, let's just talk a little bit about your season ahead of the game tomorrow. Obviously, being very inconsistent this year, only 10 goals scored at home, but the arrival of Michy Batshuayi from Chelsea's buy-to-let scheme has really, really helped you out.
Yeah, big time. He's a perfect kind of fit for us, really, because he's that instinctive striker in the box. Needs half a chance and scores. I mean, his first goal away at Leicester, I think he just sort of stuck a leg out on the edge of the box and deflected it past Michael. He's brought a sort of energy to the forward line, which, you know, bless Benteke, we haven't really had recently, although he has been out injured for a while. So The rest of our team's great. We're a very solid defence, although I know we weren't when we came down to the Amex earlier in the season, but we're a decent midfield, we've got loads of options there. It's just up front, we're just not really firing. But Batshuayi feels like kind of the jigsaw puzzle piece that we've been missing, really. And the last few games, he's been excellent, scored again at Burnley, links up really well with Wilf and Townsend. And yeah, I think we might have found that missing piece, really.
It's really taken the pressure off Wilf, hasn't it?
Yeah, big time, it has. Although I think really every game there's still pressure on Wilf because he's so good. Mm. And he almost needs the other guys up front to have blinders as well to draw attention away from him. But he'll always have that, I think, because of his, you know, stature and because of his reputation. And teams know they can get at him sometimes, and I expect you guys to be trying to do the same on Saturday. But unfortunately, I think when you're that good, that's always going to happen, no matter who you're playing for.
I mean, that's a point about Wilf. And if you can give an honest appraisal, you know, assuming he's not going to listen to this, you know, obviously you guys love him, you worship him, he's your man. But I mean, there surely must be an element about him that you guys realise that, you know, he has got a short fuse. He has got a little bit of a glass jaw when it comes to sort of like temperament, and that once or twice he can get a little bit sort of little bit ratty.
Yeah, I would say that is the one thing about Wilf that probably frustrates Palace fans the most, because it's like a self-destruct button. Mm. And he's so good. He just doesn't need to get involved in any of that stuff. And when players are winding him up, you know, James Ward-Prowse giving him a little sort of chop round the face. But it's all out of fear. It's all out of fear and jealousy, you know, that they're scared of him. And I think he needs to just kind of accept that. I mean, I'm not saying he should accept getting kicked. And sometimes he does get kicked, you know, a lot, and refs don't protect him. But I don't know. I don't want to advocate Wilf getting chopped at all. He's our best player. I don't want to see him get injured. But it is, in a way, fear. I think it is just fear from other players. And if they start doing that, you kind of mentally already got them.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, we're going to crack on. So what we're going to do here is, and we've kind of primed you for this a little bit, and actually, AD, if you briefly give the history of the TV show that never was.
Well, it has aired a few times, but fortunately no one actually saw it, at least I don't think so. We certainly didn't talk about it very much, but there's a show that
it's on ITV4,
on BT Sport, that myself and Jim did, called Call Yourself a Fan. And I kind of got the impression that something might be a little bit awry when I walked into the studio and everything was red and blue, and we were greeted by the floor manager going, "All right, how are you doing?" And he's wearing a Pally shirt, and we're thinking, "Oh my god!" And we sit down, and we start doing the quiz.
Face it, you were sulking about the fact your questions were hard and Palace ones were easy. Is that your point?
Well, I still don't know what Pascal Gross's tattoos mean, but I now know where he's born. So that was one thing. But
whereas Palace's questions were, "Who's your favourite player?"
Basically, it pretty much
Jim,
was.
Jim,
yeah.
Okay, take AD's grumbles on board. Do they have much cachet to them, or is he just being a whiny old little moo?
I mean, all I'll say is the score speaks for itself.
It was like, what was it, like a question you got asked?
He's going to rant forever. I've really wound him up now. I was a hard you, mate.
There was some really head scratching.
Right, okay.
Really?
Well, I've written, what I've done here is I've written five questions each for Jim and for AD. I'm going to be asking AD, the Brighton fan, four questions on Palace and one about his home side. And likewise, Jim, I'm going to ask four Albion-related questions to you. And one Palace one. And these are not your usual run-of-the-mill ones. I've created some stinkers here. So let's see how well you know your history. Now, the question is, Nick Japanik is sitting next to me. Nick, just pick one. Who's going to go first?
Let's let AD go first.
Okay, AD, are you ready?
No.
Okay. Question one, and I expect you to get this, by the way, Jim. What was the name of the Croydon-born builder who died in 1981, who was the chairman of Crystal Palace from 1958 to 1972?
Nodes.
You tell him, Jim.
Arthur Waite.
Correct. Well done.
Do I get a point for that?
You can have a point for that. It's two for your own question and one bonus if you don't. So here's one for you, Jim.
Okay.
Which Brighton character was portrayed by actor Paul Bowne in The Damned United?
Peter Taylor?
No, it wasn't. AD, who was it?
Bamba.
It was Mike Bamba, who was seen to be offering Brian Clough a job down here. So that's a point each. AD.
I was going to say Norman Wisdom.
AD, Crystal Palace moved into Selhurst Park in 1924. What is situated where Crystal Palace's previous ground, The Nest, was?
Is it Crystal Palace Athletic Stadium?
It's not. Jim, what's there now?
I actually don't know. I was going to say the Crystal Palace Tower, toss at the transmitter.
No, it's the Selhurst Railway Depot.
I did not know that.
There you go. It's where it's land that was owned by the church, leased to the London and Brighton South Coast Railway. And it was Crystal Palace played there for 6 years, having taken the land from Croydon Common FC. There you go. So no points there.
These are horrible questions.
Yes, I know. I did tell you. Jim, your question. Brighton moved to the Annex in 2011. What was located at Brighton's previous, as in most recent, ground before that, from 1948 to 1952?
Another ground.
Hosting what?
Well, see, I remember playing at the Wisden.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, you were at the Goldstone.
Mm-hmm. I'm asking about what was at Wisden.
Athletics?
No, that's not the question. Athletics has been hosted there for a long time, but from 48 to 52, with Dean was?
A zoo.
It was a zoo.
of all things.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was.
Oh,
as,
wow.
Yes. Yeah. That whole sort of kind of bowl. It was just a big sort of zoo. Right, AD, your question. When Crystal Palace were last relegated from the top division, name one of the two clubs that they were relegated with. Jim, what year was that?
2005.
Mm-hmm. You don't get a point for that. Sorry, mate.
name one of the two.
Name one of the two.
Okay. West Brom.
No, go on, Jim.
No, I think West Brom, actually, that was the season that West Brom performed that miracle recovery.
And yes,
up
they did.
At Christmas. One of them was Southampton.
Yeah.
And the other one, I can't actually remember.
Okay, well, you got your point anyway, Jim. The other one was Norwich.
Was that Southampton that day, watching Harry Redknapp wave to the fans, wave goodbye
to the Premier
League?
I was going to go with one of the Welsh sides, but it was...
There you go. Jim, your question. When Brighton were last relegated from the top division, name one of the other two clubs to be relegated with them.
Oh, my God.
Admittedly, we're going back a lot further to 1983.
I was going to say, 83. Okay, I'm just going to take a complete stab at in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
Ipswich.
No, it wasn't Ipswich. AD, can you fill in for a bonus point?
Man City?
Man City was one of them. And Swansea was the other. That was the time when Luton sent them down and David Pleat danced across the pitch.
Blimey.
Yeah, so that was that one. So, yes, that's another point. So that's 2 points each we've got here. All right, AD, your fourth question and your last Palace-related one. What nationality is the Crystal Palace club captain?
club captain. This is Milojevic, however you pronounce it.
I'm asking the questions.
He is... He's from Yugoslavia, so whatever that is now.
You've got 7 to choose from, I think, haven't you?
God.
You've got about 7 choices then.
No, looking at your notes, AD.
I can tell you that he was born in a place called Kragujevic.
You're looking at notes. Sorry about this. I'm going to dock you a point if you carry this on.
That's cheating.
It is cheating. AD, give me an answer.
I can't remember who he plays for.
Leave your notes alone.
He plays for Crystal Palace.
Yeah. He plays for Crystal Palace. Did you say? Who's your answer?
It's the old Yugoslavia. He was born in Belgrade, Serbia.
Yeah. Cool. I'll give you that, but...
Ooh,
yeah, I know.
Don't know about that.
I know. It's... Yeah, well, he was kind of... I mean, it doesn't actually say on his notes that it's Serbian, but, you know... Yeah. I am trying to do this as fairly as possible.
Yeah.
Right, Jim, your last Brighton-related question. What nationality is the Brighton and Hove Albion club captain?
Is it Lewis Dunk? I think it... Or is it Pascal Gross? I don't know. I think it might be Gross. No, he's quite new, so I don't think he's going to be... Maybe it's Dunk. If it's Dunk, then it's obviously England.
Stop giggling,
Nick. I know, hang on. I've worked out who it is. It's someone that's been there much longer than Dunk. It's
Are you looking up notes as well?
It's the guy with the beard. What's his name? Bruno.
Brian Blessed, you mean?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, so what nationality?
Spanish?
It is, yeah, Spanish.
But just for information, Lewis Dunk has actually been at the club longer than Bruno.
Well,
has he? Oh,
yeah,
okay.
That doesn't matter.
Has Dunk been captain? Has Dunk ever been captain?
He's the current first team captain at the moment when Bruno's not playing. So,
he's the vice captain. So, yeah, when Bruno doesn't always play. But if Bruno plays, he's skipper.
Okay.
Right. Okay, Ady, your final question.
Yes.
Right. So 2 points each, by the way, for those ones there. In 2012-13, three Palace and one Brighton player made it into the PFA Championship Team of the Year. Which defender was the Brighton player who made it into the team?
In 2013?
2012-13, yep.
Defender?
Yep.
Matt Upson?
No. Jim, can you step in for a bonus point here?
Wayne Bridge?
Well done for a bonus point.
Ooh!
And your final question here, Jim. In 2012-13, three Palace and one Brighton player made it into the PFA Championship Team of the Year. Wilf was one of them, obviously. Name one of the other two.
I mean, it's got to be Glenn Murray, surely.
Is that your answer?
Yeah.
Yeah, Glenn Murray it is. Do you remember the other one?
He scored 30 goals. It can't not be.
Yeah, and do you remember the other one?
Jednak?
No, it was Yannick Bolasie.
Okay, yeah, fair shout. He had a good season as well.
So, I can't work out the scores, but basically, Jim, you won.
History repeats itself.
That's a draw, isn't it?
AD, don't ever do a quiz again.
That's a draw.
No, he got
maybe not.
He got Wayne Bridge.
Yeah, okay.
And you didn't.
Okay.
But anyway, thank you, AD. Thank you, Jim, for playing a question of Raw. Listen, Jim, thanks for coming on the show. What are your expectations for this game and for the rest of the season?
I mean, we're in quite good form at the moment. We've hit a little patch of decent form. I know you guys aren't quite in such a good run of form, and
Derbies can change that, can't they?
We need to get revenge for the Amex game. We were so bad down there. We can't be that bad again.
Mm-hmm.
So I expect us to really go for it. I think if we come out of the blocks firing and we get an early goal, then, you know, I think we could win it. If we don't, the longer the game goes on and we don't score, then I think we'll get a bit nervous and the atmosphere will change in Selhurst, and I think that could play into your hands. But I think we're going to go for it. And I think I think it'll be close like last season. You know, that 3-2.
That was a silly game.
Might
that was
be 3-2 again. But yeah, I think we'll win just about.
I'm expecting either 0-0 or 4-3. So it's going to be one of those.
To be honest, right now I'd bite your hand off for a draw. So yeah. But listen, Jim Daly, thanks very much indeed for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. And we will...
no luck tomorrow, but a modicum of luck for the rest of the season. And we'll catch up hopefully on the 26th of April. Are you coming down for this year's Renfrew game?
He's playing.
I am indeed.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I am indeed. I'll be on the bench, of course, but I'll be there.
A new bench as well. We were at Worthing. It's a plastic 3G pitch and it's nice facilities, and looking forward to seeing you, mate.
Lovely stuff. I'll see you down there, boys.
All the best, Jim. Thanks a lot.
Okay, so what? 26-24.
26-24,
so plus that 20, so we've got about another, let's say, 12 minutes. What have we got to talk about?
Okay, and that was, of course, Jim Daly. Now, Nick, we mentioned it earlier, your columns, can you call them columns on a website?
Yeah, I suppose so. Interviews, yeah, media interviews. The idea was that, the club sort of said they wanted to get into more sort of long-form journalism rather than the stuff that's usually on club websites, which is, people chatting to players and, passing on news. So we came up with the idea of doing, for each home game, there'd be a media roundup of the... the sort of the early headlines and seeing what people have said about us. And there's been some pretty grim things recently. The other good thing about that Huddersfield match was it actually made good reading to report people talking about goals. But the other thing we came up with was the idea of getting the view of somebody from the other side. And in most cases, it's been a journalist that I've known. So, when we started it just before Christmas, just after Christmas with the Arsenal game, and Amy Lawrence, of course, is a long-time friend of the club who wrote an awful lot about the war years. So yeah, she was
one-time
obvious
guest on the Roar as well.
Yeah, somebody, whose second club is definitely the Albion, and so she was an obvious person to start with, had a lot to say. And it's partly, to get the other team's view of us, but also... how people who support the opposition think their club is doing, and maybe marking our card on who's good to look out for when we play them. But you get interesting other sort of insights. I mean, Alistair Campbell, not a man to everybody's taste, but a fierce Burnley fan, absolutely dedicated Burnley fan, and what he had to say about politics and football, and the teams that some politicians support, and how important things like, giving planning permission for the Amex was, because governments don't just do mad stuff like Brexit. They do important stuff for communities, and giving permission for, valuable community assets like the Amex is one of them. And I asked him if that little stunt of the head tennis between Tony Blair and Kevin Keegan had been his idea. And he said it was. And he talked me through, he thought that Keegan would be so good at head tennis that even if Blair turned out to be rubbish at it, that Keegan would make him look good. And of course, the revelation that it happened at Stanley Deeson. It all took place before a Labour Party conference in Brighton. So one of those famous sort of politics stroke football collisions actually happened just up the road from Whitehawk FC, which is rather wonderful.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, along those lines, also we're talking about politics and football clashing. I mean, there was all the, we,
I love all the. We'll get back to this in a minute, but I'm just reminded of all the various things that the fans have done, like, you know, marching on the Labour Party conference, marching on the Lib Dem conference, Paul Samra and Ed Basford and Ros Basford and others and Adrian Newnham handing out menus at the Lib Dem conference. You know, of you know, the wine was Cabernet So very young, and Lewis in NIMBY sauce and all those lovely things, and also the less sort of appealing spectacle of Ted. Tessa Jowell playing football at Withdean.
Well, yes, I missed that one, unfortunately. Yeah. But there you go.
No, quite.
No, but it's been interesting actually. Also talking. So, you know, obviously you build up various sort of contacts in the business. So, you know, with some clubs, it's been very easy just to sort of pick up the phone and talk to Dominic Fifield for Crystal Palace, who's, you know, been a friend for a long time. And yeah, as we reveal in that interview, that some Palace and Bright fans, you know, in the media do get along, and we talk to each other most of the time. Probably won't be talking very much tomorrow, you know, depending on what goes on.
It's a bit like us and Jim Daly, to be honest. Yeah. It's like, I mean, we get on with Palace.
Yeah.
I mean, Brighton and Palace is actually just two brothers that don't get on. I they're mean, actually, the similarities are quite startling between the two clubs.
I don't, you know, Dominic says he loves going to the Amex because the people are so friendly. And, you know, I have to say that the media staff at Crystal Palace are very friendly, you know, and they're very nice people. And there is one club that I don't think anyone enjoys going to, but I don't think it would be very good you know, PR to say who that is, because I've got to do an interview with one of their fans later. But no, it's but talking to some of the people, you know, there are some clubs where you think, oh God, who supports Huddersfield, who supports Derby, and finding those people, you know, usually local people, you know, the guy Mel Booth, who's actually a legend in Huddersfield, who's been following them since 1970, God knows what, you know, and he's not, he's a very critical fan, as you would have to be, you know, working for the local paper for all that time. But it was very interesting to see hear his take on, you know, what the club's ambitions should be now, you know, and whether, you know, they were a failure because they were going to finish bottom or second bottom. But, you know, I think he thought that, you know, no Huddersfield fan even 5 years ago ever thought they'd be in the Premier League again. So, you know, it's been a fantastic ride for Huddersfield, and, you know, winning playoff finals and everything like that, it's been great for them. And to hear those perspectives on clubs, and hear Ivan Gaskell, who's a Derby fan, you know, saying that Bobby Zamora spoiled his life, you know, gave him his worst moment in football with that goal for QPR against it. And, you know, his description of the sound rolling up Wembley from the QPR end when it, you know, and him and he'd taken his son, and it spoiled him, spoiled this father and son moment that was supposed to be so great. But no, it just reminds you as well, you know, what being a football fan means to everybody. You know, just because you're in the media and you do it for a living doesn't mean you're not a fan of someone. In fact, you know, everyone's a fan of someone. That's why they get into it.
Well, along the same lines, I mean, we are invited into sort of other people's podcasts as well. I mean, you know, you're often on AD on TalkSport too, aren't you? And I'm sort of every 6 weeks or so I'm on the Anfield Wrap, and it's lovely to actually just talk to intelligent sort of fellow fans about sort of the niceties of the game. You know, I'm thinking, and I have to say this, and whilst we're actually talking about fellow fans, I just want to say brilliant, once again, like we did last week, brilliant that Blackpool Football Club have actually back in their own ownership now. And I wish them a really good day, you know, against Southend. Southend's not going to know what's hit them. But
well, at the time of recording this, there's 300 seats left for the game. And that's
clean ones now.
Yeah, well, and they're appealing for people to clean their seats after them as well. So it's like a whole new supporting experience. It's like the World Cup all over again. Okay, we're talking about a whole new supporting experience. We have an FA Cup quarterfinal next week. Well, it's not whole new because we were in the quarterfinals last year, Nick. But
have such a good chance now, don't we?
This is a massive game for us.
I was watching the draw. I don't usually watch FA Cup draws, but I was just thinking, oh, I'd really like to get Millwall. but no, it was once again, Millwall, and, you know, from those who see Millwall from the inside, are a fantastic club, very friendly club, a club that works probably harder than any other club, you know, in its community because it has to. Mm-hmm. And without blowing, you know, my own trumpet about the interviews again, Mike Calvin has done the interview for Millwall, and you know, I have to say, nothing to do with me writing it, but just from what he said, should be a fantastic read. He was embedded with the club for a whole year, you know, and he knows that club from the inside like no journalist has ever had a chance to do, possibly since Hunter Davis wrote The Glory Game about Tottenham. So, you know, if it goes wrong and somehow we don't get through to an FA Cup semi-final. I can't think there's anybody else in the cup draw that I would rather see beat us. Of course, I hope it doesn't happen, you know, and that we... That we obviously get to Wembley twice.
Of course, having said what we said with Jim earlier, it could be that Palace play Millwall in the semi final. Yeah, that'll be sure. Fun.
It's on so many levels.
No, I'm sadly I'm going to miss the Millwall. You know, I'm not going to be there. But actually, Millwall's actually a reasonable day out. I mean, they do have a few sort of, you know, fair few idiots still. But I like going to the neck of the woods, and you can see that it's actually a community club. And also, we were very supportive of when they had their nonsense with Lewisham Council and then sort of like, you know, gerrymandering, trying to get them out of the borough. And you know we wish them well, but you know, and not next Sunday.
One of my greatest Albion away memories, apart from us going up there to the Den and winning in pink in that in that playoff semi final, was seeing an Albion fan on South Bermondsey Station in one of the recent games wearing the pink and white women's shirt, and I just thought, fair play to you, mate.
Yep.
You pick your matches, don't you? Millwall away, excellent,
absolutely.
But we'll talk more about that next week on the Albion Raw here. But that's all we've actually got time for this week. So thanks very much to, of course, Nick Schrapanik. Thank you to Alan West. Thank you to Jim Daly. I'm Eddie Packham. We're all off to,
I am the god of hellfire, and I bring you fire.